Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Sergeant of Arms will bring in the instructed to bring in the absent members. Our chaplain today is Reverend Craig Richter, retired Lutheran pastor from Roseville, Minnesota. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Morning, how are you? Thanks. Well, I brought my 3-year-old grandson here today because it's my day to be his care provider. And he's sitting back in the room behind us with a blanket over himself and a pillow. And that's the last thing that he'll probably remember of being here, was how comfortable it was. But your work has a greater effect on Maxwell than he can appreciate at this time. The work that you provide will affect him years and years down the road. In baptism, we entrusted him to God. Being a child growing up here in Minnesota, he is entrusted to you. And the work that you do and the decisions that you make will have a bearing on his life. I thank you for the work you do. Let us pray. Lord God, sometimes we feel that our work is small or paltry. It's so often critiqued and torn apart by people whose views are different than ours. I'm grateful for these people and for the work they do. I pray not only for our senators, but for all the people who work here, their aides, who sit in meetings, who offer them information and insight and their own opinions. All these people, God, are trying to do your work, work that affects our children and our grandchildren and the welfare of this land. Bless them in their work. Give them integrity and discretion. We all need that help. In your name we pray. Amen.
Let's just turn here towards the flag. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fishbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Siebenskoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
Quorum is present. Moving on to the second order of business, executive and official communications, as you see on the agenda for today. Moving on to the third order of business, messages from the House. Secretary will read.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files. Herewith returned Senate file 1492 relating to state government, Senate File 2360 relating to health, Senate File 1599 relating to Veterans Affairs, Senate File 1620 relating to eminent domain, Senate File 1875 relating to insurance, Senate File 1964 relating to labor and industry, Senate File 2114 relating to child support judgments, Senate File 2060 relating to legislative enactments, Senate File 1689 relating to Veterans Affairs, Senate File 2183 relating to education. Albert A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
No action is necessary. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments to the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 288, a bill relating to health. Senate file 288 is herewith returned to the Senate. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Howell.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur with the amendments by the House to Senate File 288, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by a subcommittee on the conference committees on the part of the Senate to act like a conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Secretary will read.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file, Senate file 2296, a bill for an act relating to elections. There has been appointed at such committee on the part of the House Sanders, Dott, and Simon. Senate file 2296 is herewith returned to the Senate. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
No action necessary. Secretary will report.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file, Senate file 2493, a bill for an act relating to natural resources. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Erdahl, McNamara, and Lilly. Senate file 2493 is herewith returned to the Senate. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
No action required. More messages.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments on House File 2294. House File 2294, a bill for an act relating to state government. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee of five members be appointed thereon. Abler, Gottwald, Giftmeyer, Schumacher, and Huntley have been appointed to such committee on the part of the House. Senate House File 2294 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee in House File 2294, and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Secretary will report messages.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File number 2949, House File 2949, a bill for an act relating to education. The House respectfully requests that the conference committee of five members be appointed thereon. Garofalo, Anderson P., Erickson, Loon, and Dittrich have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 2949 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File number 2949, and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Secretary will report.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files numbers 2705, 2861, 2614, 2627, and 2647. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
No action necessary. Moving on to the fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. Let's give the first reading. As indicated on the agenda. Moving on to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I move that committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Moving on to the seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. Second reading. Moving on to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. As indicated in the Senate agenda, first reading. Moving on to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. We have two authors' motions. Do I read them? Take them as one. Move to adopt. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. We have two resolutions that will be referred to Rules Committee. Senate Resolution Number 150, a Senate resolution authorizing April 16, 2012, as Drug Court Day in Minnesota, referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File Number 2409 be taken from the table and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with House File Number 2647.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. Having voted on the prevailing side, I move that the vote whereby Senate File 2571 was passed by the Senate on April 16, 2012, be now reconsidered.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Gimsey.
I move that Senate File 2571 be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. In case I missed it, what is Senate File 2571?
Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Dibble, this was the finance bill that we passed yesterday for transportation finance. The Senate got a little bit ahead of the House and sent it over there too soon.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. Mr. President, they would be on your sheets. Number 106, Senate File 1597 by DeKreif. Number 2, Senate File 1072 by Gimsey. Number 101, Senate File 1573 by Fischbach. Number 102, House File 1813 by Nelson. And number 25, House File 1976 by DeKreif. If you're wondering, members, we're going to come back to the Ingebrigtsen bill on a different motion.
They have been so designated. First up will be number 101, Senate File 1573, Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, this is the higher ed omnibus bill, and sections 1 through 3 of the bill are Senate File 1858, a Senator Carlson bill, and this bill relates to the textbook, which aims to provide students with more information regarding required and recommended course materials so that the students have a better idea of what's going to be required in text before they register for a class. Sections 4 and 5 are also a Senator Carlson bill, which would allow MNSCU to continue operation during a government shutdown. Section 6 is language that would increase the bonding authority for the system revenue fund from the current level of $300 million to $405 million. And these projects, the projects funded by these bonds are financed by revenue of the project. So those are handled by the by the universities. Section 7 is the language from Senate File 2289, which is a request from the Office of Higher Ed, and basically it's just some cleanup language on the contingent account owner for the Minnesota College Savings Plans. Section 8 is Senator Tomasoni's bill, so if you do have questions there, I would direct them to Senator Tomasoni. But this changes how the dollars within the Permanent University Fund are allocated, and would move some of these dollars to fund and to establish an engineering program at the Mesabi Range Community College and Technical College. There is one additional provision that was not in the original bill, which caps the amount of any of the scholarships a student might receive for the new program at $6,500 a year. Section 9 is Senator Pappas's bill that would grandfather a very small number of institutions who were caught up in some unintended consequences and a name change. So that straightens that out. Sections 10 and 11 are Senator Vanderveer's bill, which would expand eligibility for the Safety Officers Survival Program so that, those dollars could be used for graduate programs, and it is effective retroactively, so it would include some folks that are attending graduate school now. Section 12 is the language for the working group on the textbook bill from Senator Carlson's bill, and Section 13 is Senator Rest's bill regarding the transfer of money for the graduate medical education from the University of Minnesota to the Hennepin County Medical Center, which is about $1.2 million. That's pretty much what the bill has in it, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Further discussion on Senate File 1573. Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I would like to offer the A8 amendment.
Senator Eaton offers the A8 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Eaton moves to amend Senate File 1573 as follows. Page 1 after line 12, insert. This is the A8 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Eaton.
Thank you. This is the fast track, the governor's fast track adult career pathway program amendment. And this would expand the current program from the metro area to the entire state, where MNSCU works with businesses to provide training for actual positions that are available in that community.
Further discussion on the A8 amendment. Senator Fischbach.
And first, Mr. President, I was having a little bit of trouble hearing Senator Eaton, and I'm wondering if she would possibly repeat some of that. And maybe explain. This is a couple of pages, and maybe a little more explanation on the amendment while I take a look at it.
Thank you. And members, let's keep in mind to keep it to a low roar here so that we can hear our senator speak. Again, Senator Eaton.
Senator Fischbach, I'm proposing the Fast Track Adult Career Pathway Program amendment. It would expand the current Fast Track program that we have here in the metro area to the entire state through the MNSCU system. It would offer businesses and MNSCU facilities the ability to work together to develop programs that would lead directly into employment and in providing jobs for people who don't necessarily have the skills at this time. It does require a local program partner to provide these service components, and they have to meet the participants have to meet the adult education components. Let's see. And it also appropriates $4.5 million in fiscal year 2013 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for the program. And this is the governor's bill.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, as I'm glancing at this on page 4, there is a $4.5 million appropriation from the general fund that we don't have any way to cover. I guess I would believe that this would put this out of balance and would not be appropriate under our rules.
Senator Fischbach, is that a point of order?
Yes, Mr. President. I'm glancing at the rule book right now to get the appropriate line for you. Mr. President?
Senator Fischbach.
And Mr. President, it looks like you may have found it. It's 7.4. Thank you.
Thank you. Further advice? Otherwise, as I see 7.4, Amendment A8 will, in fact, increase net appropriations from the fund, so the amendment is out of order. Further discussion on Senate File 1573. Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, I have the A7 amendment.
Senator Pappas offers the A7 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Pappas moves to amend Senate File 1573 as follows. Page 5 after line 3, insert. This is the A7 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this would do is it would provide for two members of the Board of Regents to be represent students. And the second student seat could be either in the at-large seat or the congressional district seat. And this is really a situation where it is currently, where we have two members of the Board of Regents who started out as students. One filled the student seat and one filled the fifth congressional seat. And students have been very happy with this situation, that they have two people on the Board of Regents that they feel that are kind of looking out for their interests. And so this would allow during the next go-round, when we're picking regents, for students to apply for one of the open seats other than just the student seat. So I would respectfully request your support.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, we did discuss this amendment in committee, and the committee did come to some kind of consensus thinking that we would work on this, but this is not something that we want to do quickly, and what we'd like to do is take more of a look at it. So I am going to oppose the amendment, and do understand we did have this discussion in committee and did not pass the bill.
Further discussion on the A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment fails. Further discussion on Senate File 1573. Seeing none, Secretary will give it its third reading.
Senate File number 1573, a bill for an act relating to higher education, third reading.
Further discussion on Senate File 1573. Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on under special orders, we'll move to number 106, Senate File 1597, Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 1597 is another veterans hiring preference bill. The first portion of this, the Article 1, we've already talked about on the Senate floor. It's the USERRA portion that was on another bill that we moved forward earlier. What we do is we get down to Article 2, and this is the portion, this is the meat and potatoes of this bill. What this does is this takes state procurement. It increases the existing permissive preference to veteran-owned contractors from 6 to 8%. But it does not mandate, but it allows the commissioners to provide this preference. In Article 3, in state contracting, currently veterans are lumped in with other targeted business groups when contracting preferences are permissively considered. In Senate File 1597, this bill, it separates veterans from other groups, mandates at least some preference, not less than the targeted business groups, and up to the same permissive 6% preferences. In Article 4, under county preference, this authorizes but does not mandate to counties that they can establish veterans hiring preference programs in contracting.
Further discussion on Senate File 1597. Senator Miller.
Madam President, I have the A51 amendment.
Senator Miller offers the A51 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Miller moves to amend Senate File 1597 as follows. Page 7 after line 13, insert. This is the A51 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment addresses an issue that a constituent that I represent had as a member of the military and as a teacher. When he got called for active duty, he had to leave his role as a teacher for the school district. And that resulted in him actually receiving less pay because of his service to our country. And this amendment would fix that issue. I've been working with the governor's office on this, and we have their support. And I also believe that there's similar language in the House bill as well.
Further discussion of the A51 amendment. Seeing none, all in favor of Senator Miller's motion to amend the A51 amendment to Senate File 1597. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1597. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1597 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1597, a bill for an act relating to veterans. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1597. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Meaning under special orders, we will move to number 102, House File 1813, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. House File 1813 is an initiative for efficiency, something that is important to every one of us. I'd like to thank my co-authors Perry, Benson, and Sinjum. We spend a lot of time in this body dealing with the realities of our aging population, often called the age wave or the silver tsunami. We deal with growing public service needs and the shrinking base of taxpayers that result in greater needs and lesser funding. The Great Recession has further added to our challenges. Those of us who have been involved in our local...
I'm sorry, Senator Nelson.
Madam President, I am so sorry, but it is so loud in here, I cannot hear myself think.
Members, please, let's keep the noise down, and if we do have conversations, take them elsewhere. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Many of us have often dealt with the issues of these increasing needs and lesser funding. Sometimes we talk about doing things like cutting government services. Sometimes we talk about raising taxes. There are two additional areas that this bill seeks to represent. And the area in which I'm speaking is actually increased government productivity. That is to redesign the way that we deliver services to ensure the greater possible outcomes for every tax dollar spent. That may sound familiar to many of you. Many of us attended forums throughout our communities called Redesigning Government Services. I know Senator Carlson had a big impact in that area. And those forums were designed to talk about redesigning local government services. But members, maybe it's a surprise, it ought not be a surprise, but the largest employer in the state of Minnesota is the state government. And this bill seeks to look for efficiencies with Minnesota's largest employer, Minnesota state government. This legislation would require the state to embark on the type of data-driven analysis of government operations that can provide valuable information for the legislature in our efforts to ensure that taxpayer funds are used wisely and that services are delivered effectively. This sort of agency operations analysis does not seek to render judgment. That is the realm of this body. This legislation would provide additional insights on ways to make government operations work even better. Senate File 1615 seeks reorganization services under a master contract, something that will sound familiar to you as well. Last year, this body passed Senate File 907, which was a data-driven analytic approach to looking at providing certain government services and certain government operations. As you may recall, Governor Dayton implemented this under executive order, and there are about 12 master contracts looking technology, data-driven analytics to better perform government services. We have worked closely with the governor's office on this bill, and the administration believes that they will be able to use the existing master contract program as set up using data analytics to add this additional piece to the master contract. This bill would require that under the master contract, a list of eligible contractors who can assist state agencies in using data analytics to do the following. One, accomplish agency reorganization along service rather than functional lines in order to provide more efficient and effective service. Two, bring about internal reorganization and management functions in order to flatten the organizational structure by requiring that decisions are made closer to the service needed. and the Commissioner of Admin must report to the legislature by January 15th in 2013 and 14 on state agency use of eligible contracts under this section, and on improvements in efficiency and effectiveness, including the contract oversight process of state services as a result of services provided by contractors. Members, I would ask for a green vote on this. This is something that we all, I think, came to the state legislature to do, which is look at ways that Minnesota can deliver its government services in a more efficient and more effective way. I'll stand for any questions.
Further discussion on House File 1813, Senator Goodwin.
Madam President, I think that this is something that the agency, that the Department of Administration could already do if they wanted to. I think what we're doing here is probably trying to provide a contract for specifically for IBM and Senator Nelson's district. I really think it's unnecessary to have this language in law in order to do that. If the governor or the departments think that they want this done, well, they can certainly issue a master contract without us having to pass a law on it if they want data analytics added into the other issues that they have. So I would suggest a no vote on this. Let's not try to micromanage the governor's budget.
Further discussion on Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. To Senator Goodwin's points, our state has very strict laws as far as vendor selection, and I'm confident that the administration has followed those completely and will continue to do so. And that is what this body does, quite frankly, is we do provide guidance. It is our job to provide initiatives and take those forward to the governor for a signature. And as I said, we have worked closely with his office on this. I look forward and ask for your support. Thank you.
Further discussion on House File 1813. Secretary will give House File 1813 its third reading.
House File Number 1813, a bill for an act relating to state government, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1813. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 45 ayes and 19 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to number 25 on the general orders calendar, House File 1976, Senator Decreif.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1842 is a bill that would require E-Verify to be used for state employees. This bill requires employers in the legislative, executive, and judicial branches to verify the employment eligibility of all new hired employees using the federal E-Verify program. The Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget must oversee a training program for executive branch appointing authorities on the use of E-Verify and must conduct periodic audits of compliance with this requirement. I would propose with this file that Minnesota should use the system to ensure newly hired employees are valid to work in the United States before receiving costly training. Since it can take between 3 or 4 months for the federal government to validate employment eligibility through federally required I-9 forms, there's a significant period in which state employers would be training illegal workers and in some cases granting access to sensitive information. Instead, the E-Verify system uses a free website managed by the Social Security Administration and the Department of Homeland Security to check the individual status in mere minutes. According to a recent study, 98.3% of employees who were processed by the system are deemed eligible, with 1.7% of these non-confirmed. Of those non-confirmed, only 0.3% are eventually deemed eligible.
Further discussion on House File 1976, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition. Three reasons. First, businesses are opposed. Minnesota Chamber of Commerce testified, as well as at least one other business organization in committee. Overall, the Chamber believes this is one step closer to a patchwork of different state laws, and that makes it difficult to do business. Businesses prefer immigration law be left to the federal government. Secondly, Governor Plenty tried this. It didn't work. An executive order in 2008 required the state to use E-Verify. For 18 months, nothing happened because of concerns with data security. The state then hired an outside company to manage the program, which inappropriately stored Minnesota's public data. That company then sued the state. Now OET is required to review any future attempts to implement E-Verify in the state, but it does not appear this bill accounts for that oversight or the cost. And finally, in a letter that's being distributed that was shared at the committee, the MMB believes this will harm current employment review processes. In the letter, the commissioner, Showalter, says, use of the E-Verify system would result in an inefficient and duplicative process which would create appearances of unfair treatment and thereby cause an increase in employment litigation.
Senator Torres-Ray, were you standing earlier?
Thank you. Madam President, I have a question for the author. I would like to know if Senator Decreif will yield.
Senator Decreif will yield. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to make sure that members really understand the direction that this bill is taking. I think it's very, very important that you hear from the author about the reason for why we are proposing this legislation. And I would like to ask Senator Decreif to explain to you members the number of instances in which the state of Minnesota has the three branches that are obligated to follow this legislation now if the bill passes. If the author could explain to us what are the instances in which we have had to conduct an investigation or have had a problem in which any of the branches have hired people who have legal status problems, because we do have a very a system with that has a lot of integrity, and we are able to really require from people who apply and who get hired all of the information that is required to hire people who have the proper documentation to work with the state. So I would like to ask the senator to please explain to us what is the need for these legislation. And I have a follow-up on that, Madam Chair.
Senator Cray.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Torres-Ray. I'll repeat something that I said in my opening remarks, and it's about efficiency. This is about making the state of Minnesota more efficient in their hiring process. Currently, it can take between 3 and 4 months to get the information back from the federal government. And during that period of time, we could be busy training and have somebody hired, quite frankly, in an area that has some sensitive information, and who might not be eligible to work in the United States. We have an opportunity, if we implement this program, to make sure that that doesn't happen. So it's a matter of efficiency. When, you know, according to the study, 98.3% of employees were processed by this system are deemed eligible. And with the 1.7% non-confirmed, of those non-confirmed, only three-tenths of a percent are eventually deemed ineligible. So what this is, I think, is a very efficient system. So I don't see any reason why not to do this and make the state of Minnesota more efficient.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, I hope you were able to listen to the explanation. We do not have a problem. That the response is, we do not have a problem. We have a system in place that has a lot of integrity. Our human resources processes in the three branches of government have been equipped to do this work. But what will happen, though, is precisely what Senator DeCroix is explaining in a different way, which is we now will have a system that is a federal system that it will be put in place to verify legal status on a federal level related to immigration status, which is very different from human resources process. Yes, that happens very quickly when you put the name and the information of an individual in the E-Verify process, which is an automatic system. You put it in place, and it happens within seconds. But if this information is incorrect, or if you're not able to get that information about that individual, and you make a request to verify why that information is not available, that will not happen immediately. And this could happen to many, many, many individuals who want to work with the state. So, in a scenario, a human resources office members today could require the information, could have a Social Security card in their hands, could have a working permit in their hands, could have every documentation that is needed provided by the individual, and then if they decided to enter the E-Verify process, if any agency of the state, even if they have all of this information through the human resources process, they're going to enter into the E-Verify process, which is a computer system, and they may run into a problem. And then they're going to have to come back and do an investigation as to why that happens, and that indeed, members, will take months. So I want you to understand the differences between the two processes, and I want you to understand why the Department of Administration and the Pawlenty administration, who worked diligently to implement this process, was simply not able to do it. And the second part, and finally, Madam Chair, that I want to make sure is that you do know that implementing this bill will cost money because of the periodic audits, and there is no money associated with this bill. So this is a mandate to the three branches of government to implement an audit process that we are not funding. So I encourage you, members, to vote against this bill.
Senator DeCroix.
Thank you, Madam President. I want to correct one thing. That there actually is no fiscal note with this bill. There would just be a little bit of training necessary for the people that work in the HR department. And secondly, we do already require this for the contractors that work for the state of Minnesota. So if we're going to require this of the contractors for the state of Minnesota, why would we not require this of ourselves?
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm not sure some of the information you're hearing is accurate about this process. I'm an employer that uses E-Verify right now every time I hire a new person. In fact, before the recession hit, I had about 115 employees. Over a 12-month period, I went down to about 55 employees, which is about the time we implemented the E-Verify process in our organization. I have since then hired back a number of employees. We're up to about 75. So I would say about a third of our workforce right now, their status has been verified through this process. And when somebody when somebody's number doesn't match up or they're flagged, so to speak, through the application process, we simply just inform that applicant, and it's their responsibility to take that information, go down to the Social Security office, and find out why their Social Security number, their Social Security card, does not match up with their I-9 form. Members, this is a free service. Not really free because it's funded by the taxpayers. It's a federal program that simply allows an organization to compare a potential employee's status with their I-9 form. That's all it is. In fact, right on the Homeland Security website, they say that 1,400 employers are signing up for this program a week. 1,400 employers are signing up for this week, according to the Homeland Security website. Members, this is not an unreasonable request to ensure that one of the largest employers in this state, the state of Minnesota, is doing their due diligence and providing employees that work for the constituents in this state are doing it legally, members. It's not an unreasonable request, and I would urge you to support Senator Craig's bill.
Further discussion on House File 1976. Secretary will give House File 1976 its third reading.
House File Number 1976, a bill for an act relating to state government, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1976. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 39 ayes and 27 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Nelson has moved the following members be excused for a conference committee on Senate File 1528 at 1:20 p.m. Senators Nelson, Olson, and Stumpf. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that House File Number 2171 be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate House File 2171 to be made a special order for immediate consideration.
We have House File Number 2171 in front of us. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I move to amend House File 2171 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and delete the title House File Number 2171 and insert the language after enacting clause and the title of Senate File Number 1943, the second engrossment. Basically,
Senator Ingebrigtsen has moved the A50 amendment. The secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves to amend House File 2171 as follows. Delete everything. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, what that does, it basically puts the Game and Fish Bill in line with the the House version that was passed off the House floor.
To the A50 amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion the A50 amendment be adopted on House File 21. Senator Higgins.
Madam President and Senator Ingebrigtsen, just to be sure, you're going to take up the House language rather than the language that our committee put together?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam President, Senator Higgins, we're taking up the Senate language and adding it to the House file. That's correct.
Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion the A50 amendment be adopted to House File 2171. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is the coming before you here is House File 2171, the Game and Fish Bill that the Department of Natural Resources, a department bill that was brought to us this year. And it has an awful lot of stuff in it, and I can just go down and highlight a little bit of it if I can, and then we're going to be talking about some amendments moving forward. But the economic impact on businesses across our state, fishing contributes $4.7 billion to the Minnesota economy and more than 43,000 jobs. Hunting in Minnesota has a $1.47 billion impact. That's huge, folks. 597,000 people hunt in Minnesota each year, spending $482.6 million on lodging, gas, food, and gear, an average of $783 per hunter. And that generates about $64 million in sales tax revenue for the state. They support more than 14,000 Minnesota jobs with combined salaries and wages of $365 million. We must keep hunting and fishing quality high to continue to generate income for small businesses, all across our state. Members, the bill is quite lengthy. I can just give you a little highlight, a few different things that might be of interest to you as you follow through the sections here. Section 4 talks about unprotected animals, the brush wolf described as coyotes. We're going to get into some discussion with regards to timber wolf later on, or the gray wolf. Wolf licenses, we're going to be talking about that with working with the DNR and working with the wolf management program that they do have. We have Section 9 deals with portable stands on WMAs, deer stands. Just skipping down as we go along there, and of course, when I get done here, members, I'll certainly stand for questions. I will deal with lifetime licenses. We're going to be talking about the possibility of adding an amendment here shortly with regards to fees. We have a bill from Senator Tomasoni with regards to shooting firearms near a stockade or corral. Expands the current prohibition to any shooting of a firearm within 500 feet of the stockade of a corral. A firearm safety certificate for veterans was something we dealt with. Veterans got, I think, a fair amount of attention in this bill. Firearms and scopes on muzzle loaders, that's a proverbial thing that seems to be coming up, at least in the last 6 years that I've been here, members. I think it's time that we move on to the opportunity of allowing scopes on muzzle loaders, as we have with rifles years and years ago. Bull hunting for wolves is one of the sections that we dealt with. Blaze orange requirements for bull hunting, mechanical or electronic assist physically disabled folks. Hunter harvested venison donation program, something that has been somewhat controversial. We're moving it forward here in the Senate. I think it's something that we can certainly work on in conference committee, continue to work on. Deer baiting has been an issue. That's dealt with in here. Party hunting is dealt with, as well as the taking of wolves. Beaver control is always an ongoing issue in the state of Minnesota. We're going to be addressing that in this bill. Predator control payments, things like that. Registration of wolf carcasses once the animal is taken, and we can get into a little bit more discussion about the new wolf season. Members, as you know, Timber Wolf has been on the D list for many years here in the state of Minnesota, and quite frankly, it has worked. It has worked very well, as a matter of fact. In fact, we now have numbers exceeding the expectations of the people that were concerned in the years ago about the delisting of the gray wolf, and it's I think it's a success story similar to that of the bald eagle. That the numbers, as you that are of older age like myself, remember some years in Minnesota where there were no bald eagles, and now we have an abundance number of bald eagles. So it's a real success story for the delisting program. However, the DNR some 10 years ago put together a wolf management program, and that wolf management program consisted of a five-year waiting period that was enacted back 10 years ago, and as you know, the wolf was taken off the D list two different times and put back on. Once, the most recent one was because of a technicality, and basically what's happened over the time of the Minnesotans' inability to manage the gray wolf, we now have an abundance of gray wolf. Last year, if you recall, in the Game and Fish bill, we did address the five-year moratorium. The reason was, I think, was a pretty reasonable request. The DNR came forward and asked that they have the ability to manage those wolves immediately coming off the D list. So that was voted on unanimously last year in this Game and Fish bill to allow the DNR, should at that time the wolf come off the Federal D List Act. Since then, members, it has come off the D List Act, and this bill addresses moving forward now to managing the animal in the state of Minnesota. We have, it should be known that we have the third largest group of wolves in the North American continent next to Alaska and Canada. We have neighboring states, some western states that have some animals, but nothing like what we have in northern Minnesota. So there is a real need there to manage that resource, if you will, no different than when we have an overabundance of whitetail deer, or if we have, in some cases, an abundance of some type of a fish, or if we have less fish, we would reduce the management numbers. So just understand there's a lot of thought that went into this process, a lot of deliberation by not only legislators, but the DNR, as well as parties who were involved. And it's going to be no surprise to you that there are those concerned that do not want the taking of any wolf, and you and I have certainly witnessed that over the last weeks with the emails that we've been getting from different organizations, not only in the state, but also the nation as well as internationally. So people do care about the animal. There's not anybody, I don't think, in fact, I can assure you that the 67 senators in this room, and staff included, that don't care about all animals in the state of Minnesota. I think we all love our resources, and we have an abundance of resources, and we happen to have an overnumber, an overpopulation, according to the biology and the science when it comes to wolf. So they have been, as you should know, that they have been dealt with over the last years federally. If there has been any farmers or any problem animals throughout the state of Minnesota, on an average, there's been right around 100 and the high hundreds are right around 200 animals taken every year because of the deprivation program. So, Madam Chair, with that, I would like to offer and move forward with the A5 amendment that deals with some of the issues that I just recently talked about, the A5 amendment.
Members, the Secretary will report the amendment, the A5 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves to amend House File 2171 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 17th as follows. Page 1 after line 18, insert. This is Amendment A-5.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. The A-5 amendment is the fee. Basically, it's a couple things. There's the removal of beaver and beaver dams and lodges by road authority amendment in here by local units of government. As you can see, it's pretty straightforward there. There's been, again, some ongoing issues with how to manage that particular type of animal in the forest and streams. They've become very problematic due to the high water and overabundance of numbers there. So it seems like we're dealing with that in ongoing fashion. The other part of the amendment talks about a one deer, additional deer permit in the Zone 3, which is the zone south south and east of the metro area. Where we had SWD, an issue that we dealt with some years ago, where that basically the DNR has worked out a system there with the deer hunters and property owners in that area where they'd be able to take one extra antlerless deer and it will not go against their quota. That's the only part of the state of Minnesota where that actually can be done. That, members, along with the fees, now the fees, We're going to be moving into the area of hunting and fishing, resident, non-resident, trapping fees. And members, this has been a unique journey, if you will, over the past 2 years. It was brought to me last year, and in your packet you have a letters of support, but you show the groups of folks that are involved and that are supportive of this. And I can name just a few if I can at this point. The Outdoor Heritage Alliance, the Northeast Minnesota for Wilderness, just to mention a few, the Nature Conservancy, Sportsmen for Change, the Sierra Club North Chapter, Pheasants Forever, the St. Croix River Association members, the list goes on and on and on that came to us. And I'm sure that have emailed you as well as probably called you and talked to you when you're out and about in the state of Minnesota, that these are the outdoors folks that care about their environment, that want to take care of the environment, and they're willing to pay their way. They're willing to pay it for that fee like they do every year. And over the past 11 years, there has not been an increase in the DNR fees. And that's been the longest standing time in Minnesota, at least in Minnesota history, since there has been an increase in hunting and fishing and trapping fees in the state of Minnesota. Last year it was brought to me because the concerns of the oversight council that supervises the DNR's revenue coming in from these fees, and also make sure that those dollars are being spent in the proper fashion. Members, this particular part of the DNR, and there are many different parts of the DNR, as you well know, but this particular part of the DNR has a has obviously a responsibility to take care of our resources, and over the years it has become obviously more costly due to the cost of living and whatnot, and what the numbers are showing that in 2013 that particular fee will be going in the red. Now I must explain to you that the enforcement folks out there is funded through this, the vehicles that they drive, along with their boats and snowmobiles and all of that, all that does the enforcing portion of the function of the DNR is covered with fees. And it's very clear that there's a lot of functions that absolutely need to stay with the times, quite frankly. And they're managing, if you can take this into perspective a little bit, 5,400 fishing lakes and walleye stocking in 1,000 lakes. The management of 1,400 WMAs, 1.4 million acres, hundreds of fishing piers and boat launches, managing seasons, populations, and habitat for about 50 different species open to hunting and fishing. Monitoring and responding to wildlife diseases such as bovine TV and chronic wasting disease, that's something that we're very familiar with in the Senate Environmental Natural Resources Committee that we've dealt with. Law enforcement office, enforcement of 154 conservation officers across the state of Minnesota. It's important to point out to you members that particular complement of enforcement officers in the state of Minnesota has not grown since in the 70s. Of course, there's been retirements, there's been replacements, but that number of enforcement officers has not grown in 40-some years. It's also important to understand that if these fees do not go forward this year, there is the risk involved of officers being laid off, and officers being laid off during a time when we are now dealing with invasive species such as zebra mussels, the most recent invasive carp that's coming up the river, and dealing with these wash stations and whatnot that we're doing with the DNR and moving forward to try and keep the migration of these invasive species in the state of Minnesota, this would not be the time to start cutting down on enforcement. And that's what potentially could be at risk here. Training in firearm safety for our kids with snowmobiles, ATV operations, 25,000 people per year that are dealt with by the DNR through this particular fund. Aquatic invasive species education, control, and enforcement, I just touched on that a bit. Management of licensed network in 1,500 locations to serve 1 million customers. And of course, let's not forget about the forest management. That's one of the biggest operations, another one of the large operations the DNR has. So members, in your packet you have a colored document with the license fees proposal. I will tell you that the governor's bill came out at approximately $14 million. We did a lot of work on this. We pared it back to about approximately $11 million yearly. Members, the question would say, well, why don't we go the whole route at one time? This was, again, being worked on over the last 2 years. The economy in Minnesota is certainly starting to shine in the right direction. There's no question about that. However, this should take the DNR, and there's some estimates and guesstimates as to how soon the legislature would have to deal with this again, anywhere from 2019 to 2020, 2021, right in there, depending upon the economy from here, and it's pretty hard to predict that. So if anything else, by cutting it back a little bit and going a little more conservative with it during these times when the public is still strapped for money, I think it's prudent to back off a little bit, and this can be dealt with a future legislature down the line. Hopefully it's not going to be dealt with, hopefully it's not going to go on as long as it has over the last session, but as it all the last 11 years, but nevertheless, we're dealing with it today. I think we can move forward with this, I think, in a good fashion. And members, it's when you have 60 different groups coming in and asking to have those fees raised, that doesn't happen too often in government. It really doesn't. Not too many people want to come in here and ask for anything to go up when it comes to financial. But the hunting and fishing people are very passionate, as you well know, about this. They want to see the resources maintained at the level they are.
Incidentally, we had one of our old favorites, Bud Grant, come in and testify in our committee. It certainly was a fun time to have him there. And the purpose of bringing him here was not only for name recognition, but also his experience in hunting and fishing in the state of, not only the state of Minnesota, but nationwide. And I asked Bud to be sure and talk about just exactly what Minnesota was all about when you talk about the other states and even other parts of the world that he's hunted in. And it was quite overwhelming, the discussion we had, that it was very clear in his mind with all his travels throughout the world, basically, that Minnesota is a jewel and we need to stay with the times and we need to protect it. So he was certainly in support of it. And quite frankly, when he looked at the fees, he said, this isn't near enough. We should be paying more. So that was his comment. But it was fun to have him there, and it was important, I think, to have that range of history, if you will, and experience in hunting that a lot of us would love to be able to have. And he brought that to the committee, and it was an enjoyable time. So with that, members, I will... once again, members, the A5 amendment has been offered. I stand for any questions if the members have any, but I would move the A5.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A9 amendment to the amendment.
Members, Senator Gazalka has the A9 amendment. Secretary will report that amendment.
Senator Gazalka moves to amend the Ingebrigtsen Amendment to House File 2171 as follows. Page 3 after line 11, insert. This is Amendment A-9.
Senator Gazalka.
Mr. President, with the proposal to increase the fishing fee from $17 to $22 is a $5 increase, and this amendment would state that $1 annually from each license issued would go towards purchasing walleye fingerlings. That project, right now we collect about $7 million towards stocking, and this would move that number to about $8 million, and I believe I have the support of the chair.
Senator Gazalka moves the A9 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Yep. All in favor?
Mr. Chair, to the amendment.
Yep. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President and Senator Gazalka, for bringing this forward. Members, I do go along with this. This is a good amendment, and let me explain it a little bit further. This does not take effect until the year 2014. So what that is, is that the fee increase that you're seeing in front of you will be in place for 1 year before this $1 actually gets taken off of that fee and directed towards the stocking program in Minnesota. So we'll give it will make sure that the DNR gets brought up as far as their funding mechanism for a 1 year period before this actually gets added to it. So this is going to be something down the line. I think it's a wonderful thing. The stocking program in the state of Minnesota has, I think, since the walleye stamp has increased fishing opportunities in Minnesota, and we should continue to do that because fishing pressure, as you all know, is huge out there, and we want to continue to keep people giving them the abilities to take home something when they do go fishing, and this will certainly help out.
Members of the A9 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to request a roll call vote on the Ingebrigtsen Amendment.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Members, we have the A5 Amendment. All in favor? Nope, roll call. Senator Bonhoff, sorry, I did have you on the list. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. President. When we heard this bill in finance, I offered an amendment to increase the fees associated with boats, and that amendment was not accepted, but I just wanted to take a few minutes to talk about why that was an important thing to do. In the governor's bill originally, the surcharges on boating licenses were part of the governor's recommendation. We still, to date, do not have a long-term funding source for the prevention of AIS. I have a significant problem with regard to zebra mussels in the district that I represent. along with Senator Olson, Lake Minnetonka has a problem with that. There are many lakes around the state that have begun to be infested, and right now there is no cure for this. This issue, aquatic invasive species, is threatening the treasure that Minnesota stands for. I'm concerned that we have not gone far enough with this bill. I appreciate the increases that Senator Ingebrigtsen is talking about, but again, we had an opportunity to be able to do something more than that, and I think that we should have. So would Senator Ingebrigtsen please yield?
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, could you talk about your vision as you look at this going forward for how, you know, I know we have invested in a research center and we are investing in research, but what do you really see as the long-term funding plan for the prevention of AIS?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator, for that question, and she's right. It was brought to the Finance Committee, I think, with tremendously good intentions. There's no question about that. However, we do not deal with boat fees in this particular bill. But what I have assured the committee is what I started out this conversation with today is that when the DNR brought this forward last year, obviously with a deficit situation, we couldn't be looking at it. My counterparts in the House agreed with that. And all during this process, we've been dealing with AIS issues, and whether it be the zebra mussel, the quagga mussel, or even the plant invasives that we're dealing with. And again, of course, the most recent is the Asian carp, silver carp coming up the river. And what we have been doing, the question is what have we been doing so far? You'll see in the governor's bonding bill, I think a $12 million package there for to deal with not only the electronic bubbler systems that are going to be potentially put over the next year or so in the river system coming up the river in the lock and dam systems, which is turning out to be several million dollars worth of funds. You're also going to see, and we already have passed off the floor, the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage, which actually put $5.5 million towards that effort. You're also going to see in that particular bill, you're actually seeing some money put towards Professor Sorensen's at the University of Minnesota with research that's going to be spent. There's actually been money. If the bills actually pass through the legislature the way I think they're going to be, at least I hope they are, there's going to be funding mechanism there for almost $4 million this year. And in this particular bill, you will see the out-of-state license fee increase of $1, which is going to bring $670,000 this year that will be going to the DNR for AIS involvement. So what's happened here, members, it's important to understand that a lot of money, and I think in a very bipartisan fashion, is being put towards these invasives. And quite frankly, the DNR has got the directive to spend an awful lot of money, which, quite frankly, they're not even going to have enough time to even spend it this year. So my commitment has been, and I made it very clear in that committee, that yes, those boat fees need to be looked at. They need to be looked at in the future. But we need to spend the money and get the money funneled in the directions that need to be so far. We can go without that fee this year, but next year or maybe possibly the year after, if I'm in this position, I was committed to doing that. So,
Mr. President,
Senator Bonoff,
to that point, the problem that we have at the lakes around the state is that we have boats that go from lake to lake, and they bring the predators with them. And so what we really need to be doing, and it isn't good enough to wait, is we need to be having boat inspections. And currently we don't have the resources to do that kind of widespread inspection. After that amendment was offered and then did not pass, Senator Langseth actually suggested that we look at increasing the license for boat trailers, because really where you have the problem isn't from the boats that are docked in one place, and you know the residents spend all their time on that lake. Rather, the problem comes from the boats that travel from one lake to another and not doing adequate cleaning afterwards, and bringing these things with them to those various lakes. So I actually looked at the potential of assessing the trailers a surcharge. Come to discover, trailers get a license one time, and so they don't have to renew their license. So that didn't turn out to be a viable alternative. But I raise it now just because it's something that the body should consider going forward, given that really it is those who travel with their boats. We might want to consider a different kind of structure with regard to the licensing of trailers. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, you had expressed your commitment to tackle this. I just wanted to make sure we took the time today here on the Senate floor to express our disappointment that, in fact, we haven't yet done an adequate job of making sure that we stop the spread.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ingebrigtsen, yield for a question.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm looking at your multicolored sheet that you handed out. For lack of a better word, let me call it a spreadsheet. And I notice on it, I'm just wondering if it's correct, your language eliminates the conservation fishing license. Is that correct?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Excuse me, Mr. President.
Sure.
It's been a long day already. Senator Bach, yes, it does. And you and I had conversations about this, and I know that was an issue that the DNR actually brought this forward without the conservation license. What their rationale was, quite frankly, I don't know if it made a whole lot of sense. They said they weren't selling very many licenses, but you know what? It makes really good sense to me if a person wants to go out and enjoy the resources that we have and only take a half a limit, then we shouldn't charge them for the whole works. And I understand that's where you brought this forward, one of the initiatives some years ago. It's a license that's very, I think folks are familiar with when we travel to Canada and we go to neighboring states. If we decide we don't want to take a full limit, we can back down and it costs us less money. So really, other than the fact that there wasn't a big discrepancy, Senator Bach, in the price, that's the only reason. So I guess that's why it isn't there.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, let me just express to you a deep disappointment that this legislature is about to eliminate the conservation fishing license. It's a provision that I put in law a number of years ago. And members, the reason is, you saw it here on the floor today, the comments that Senator Gazelka just made. Senator Gazelka offered an amendment to spend $1 million of this new license money to stock lakes with walleyes. The reason for that is we have an over-harvest in a lot of our lakes because our limits are a little bit too lucrative, I guess. So a number of years ago, I put this conservation fishing license in law, and it's been slow to take off. But the point of it is to change the culture of fishing, that people make a conscious decision the day that they buy their license, that I'm going to agree that a limit of one half, a limit of three walleyes instead of six, is a successful day on the water. And I think over time, maybe over the decades, the culture of fishing could be changed. But it's very difficult for the DNR to do it by just arbitrarily lowering the catch limit, because then the sporting community gets angry because they feel like something's being taken away from them. So this was an effort a number of years ago of mine to see if we can change the culture, that you don't have to go out every day and get six walleyes, and if you get five, well, gee, I didn't get my limit, it wasn't a successful day. That it would be okay if you went out and you got three and you came home and say, hey, I got my limit today. And that's how Ontario does it. Ontario has a limit of half on a conservation fishing license. And when people make a decision to buy that license, they agree that a successful day on the water doesn't have to be six walleyes. It can be three, and they can go home and feel good like they got their limit. And members, that will take a long time for the culture of what a successful day on the water is to change. And it is just much easier, I think, for the future of our fishing resource if we allow the public to voluntarily start to think in a different way, to start to think what a successful day on the water is. And the thought that now we're getting rid of it is very, very disappointing. And in the same bill that we're getting rid of it, we're spending $1 million more money to stock more fish. Members, that's not sustainable over the long run, over the next generation and the generation after. You know what, in Ontario? 300,000 lakes, I think. Somebody can fact check that for me. It might be 300,000 lakes and rivers. You know how many lakes they stock? None. None. Because they manage their resource largely by the fact that they have over the years been able to convince people voluntarily that you don't have to have six walleyes to have a successful day on the water. And this will take a long time to change. I'm not sure why the department actually proposed getting rid of it. And I know Senator Ingebrigtsen, this wasn't his proposal, it was a proposal from the department. The commissioner knows, the governor knows, that I'm very disappointed with that over, you know, a small amount of money in this bill. Where we, if we think long term, we need to change the culture of what a successful day out fishing is. And I think the idea of people just buying the conservation license by itself, that I want to conserve the resource and make that decision before they've ever put a hook in the water, that they've made a decision that they are going to conserve the resource and be willing to take half the limit, is an important change for the future of our fishery. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, I would have, and I think I told you that, I wouldn't have as much heartburn for the idea of fee increases, and I'd be willing to talk about something relative to fee increases if it didn't include eliminating the conservation license. But I think getting rid of the conservation license is a big mistake for my grandkids, who someday are going to want to fish on our waters. Because we cannot continue to keep pouring millions and millions and millions of dollars into stocking. When we have to do that, we are telling ourselves that the resource isn't sustainable. And to make it sustainable, we need to catch less fish. And rather than the heavy hand of the DNR pressing down what the limit is, if over time we could get the public on their own to realize that a successful day on the water is something less than six walleyes, I think would be the better way to get it for the sustainability of our fishing resource in the decades to come. So, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I just want to express my disappointment that the elimination of the conservation fishing license is in here, and tell you I regretfully have to vote against the amendment because of that. And I would have liked to have found something that I could have supported relative to license increases, because I know the Game and Fish Fund, is the deficiency there is going to have to be dealt with, if not by this legislature, by the next one.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Bach for that. And you're right. You're exactly right on a lot of points here. There has been a social change, I think, and I've been fishing as long as anybody in this room, in the state of Minnesota as well as into Canada, and there has been a social change. And I think it actually started long before that particular initiative came forward. I remember going out with my mom and dad years ago, and we didn't throw a thing back. We kept everything. We didn't wait for the big buck to come walking by. We shot, if it had a white tail on it, we shot it. That was the psychological norm back then. That has changed considerably, and I think it's unfair. It's unfair to you to say that has not changed, because I know of youngsters, certainly in my family now, and I fish with them all summer long, that love to catch fish, and when that big one gets caught, we take a picture and it goes in the water. That would have never happened years ago when my dad and I were fishing. That would have went home. That was part of the sustainability, I guess, and we had to have it. But Nevertheless, that norm has changed, as well as deer hunting has changed over the years. And when you talk about stocking fish and you try and refer to Canada or Ontario with Minnesota, I think it's a little unfair, because half of the lakes up there, probably three quarters of the lakes, you and I can't even access unless we have an airplane. So obviously they don't need and they don't get the fishing pressure that we have in Minnesota. To say that Senator Gazelka's amendment, I don't think you were necessarily against it, but again, we need to understand his amendment is very clear. It does not add any additional money to the fee. It actually takes what you see on your document here as an increase. It takes $1 out of that in 2014 and puts it towards stocking. It's not adding anything. Senator Bach, it's really unfortunate that you feel that way about the fees here. I'm not gonna go way back as to when or how this should have happened over the years. Obviously we seem to react when it's time. The Viking Stadium now, we don't need to react to that because it's a year from now. They're gonna have to play one more year. I'm using that as an example, and I don't want anybody to take it for anything other than just an example. We wait until the last to do things. County government really was no different. I did talk to you about the conservation license, I think at least two times, and I actually encouraged you to offer an amendment, and I would be open to that very amendment today.
Members, we have Senator Ingebrigtsen's A5 amendment. Secretary will take the roll. Members, at this time, we'd ask you to move to your own seats or your desk while the voting remains open until we have a final vote. So please return to your seat if you're in somebody else's chair at this point.
President.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. President, are we waiting for anyone to vote?
Members, we're still waiting for some votes here.
Mr. President.
Senator Dibble.
Who are we waiting for to vote?
Senator Dibble, it appears to me Senator Howe, Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. President, are they in the chamber?
All members having voted, there's 26. Secretary will close the roll. There being 27 ayes and 39 ayes, amendment fails. Members, further discussion?
Mr. President.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. President, I move to table House File 2171.
Members on that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, I move to recess to the call of the chair.
Members, Senator Fischbach moves to recess at call of the chair. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion carries. The Senate is in recess.
The further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senchum.
Madam President, is there a privileged report at the desk?
It appears as though there is, Senator Senchum. The Secretary will report the report.
Senator Senchum from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and hereby are appointed as conference committees on House File Number 2294. Senators Hahn, Rosen, Benson, Nino, and Laurie. House File Number 2949, Senators Olson, Hahn, Chamberlain, Stumpf, and Bonhoeff. Senate File Number 288, Senators Howe, Peterson, and Sieben. Senator Senchum moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senchum.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bill, And that would be Senate File 1694, number 95, and general orders be designated for immediate consideration.
Senator Senchum has designated number 95 on general order, Senate File 1694, as a special order. Go immediately to that. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have before us Senate File 1694, which is a fireworks bill. And I do have an amendment to that, but I'll speak to the bill a little bit before we try to put the amendment on. And members, we did a little bit of language issues on the fireworks bill, and we've listened to a lot of people to try to make sure that we're cognizant of what cities and counties want. And there's a lot of bad information out there that we're trying to usurp the rights of cities. In this bill, the only thing that we tell cities is you cannot say that you will outlaw the sale of fireworks, legal fireworks, within your city. But members, within this bill, and I have some handouts at the front that people are going to give you that should answer every question you could want to know about the sale, the license to sell, the use, the jobs, the tax implications, members, even the safety issues we've tried to cover so that you would have no questions and all the details would be sitting in front of you on the bill. Under local laws, members of any city, you can control things under nuisance ordinances, under safety, health and safety ordinances, and under even fire prevention type ordinances. So cities that will come to you and say we can't control things and things are going to get out of hand and woe is us are not telling you the truth about this bill. And also in that packet I'm handing out to you, members, is issues of safety for outdoor activities for children, because people have been telling you that these fireworks are terrible and how awful they are for children. And if you think that fireworks are bad, then, members, if you'll look at your chart that I've handed out, you certainly better outlaw bicycles, as they're the highest perpetrator of damage to children in the state of Minnesota that we can possibly have. So what we're trying to do in terms of fireworks is, as many members do know, but maybe some of you don't know, the federal government actually controls the size of fireworks. The old-fashioned things like M-80s and things that we had when we were younger, members, they're not legal to sell in the United States. So we're trying to be consistent, members, here by adopting code books. And I have a code book here from the NFPA, which talks about transportation, storage, and retail sales of fireworks and pyrotechnic articles. We adopt the latest version of that in terms of safety for selling, the types of areas you can sell in. And in terms of actually designating the fireworks, we adopt the American Pyrotechnic Association designation, classification, description of fireworks. And at this point, I would offer the A11 amendment.
Senator Jungbauer has offered the A11 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Jungbauer moves to amend Senate File number 1694 as follows, page 1, line 16, after public insert. This is an A11 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, the A11 amendment corrects some things in there that we inadvertently took out, was the ability to sell the fireworks you already wanted to sell and just allowed for a new class of fireworks. So we're correcting that technicality. But also, members, the big thing here is counties out there that had no cities that have ordinances in terms of protecting the public health and welfare or in terms of being able to offer permits for the sale of fireworks wanted to have the ability under the welfare clause of the Constitution in order to regulate these same things under noise ordinances, safety ordinances, nuisance ordinances, and those sorts of things in order to protect safety and welfare in their counties. And the A11 amendment, the significant part on line 1.8 down to 1.10, gives the counties that specific authority for fireworks to regulate under the general welfare of the citizens clause in order to keep people safe under those issues. So I'll stand for questions on the A11 amendment.
Further discussion to the A11 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Jungbauer renews his motion to adopt the A11 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1694.
So thank you, Madam Chair and members. I hope that you've had a chance to look at some of the documentation that I've handed out. Again, we're trying to adopt things from a code book, just like you would do for plumbing, heating, electric, septic systems. There is national codes on fireworks and the way to sell them, the way to display them, the way to be safe with them, and especially how they're designated in terms of what they are and what they do. And members, this is a jobs bill. It will create no less than 1,200 jobs. They say the fireworks folks are telling us 1,200 to 1,700 full-time year-round jobs because people do buy fireworks year-round. It will have a minimum impact to the state coffers of $3.6 million. Members, again, that's the low end to the state. And I don't know if you're aware, members, but there's actually been lobbyists from Wisconsin, two lobbyists working here to try to not pass this bill because they make some good money off of Minnesotans. There's been one part-time lobbyist from South Dakota working over here trying to tell us not to sell fireworks because they make good money in South Dakota off of Minnesotans. So I would tell you, members, that Minnesotans are already buying and already using what we're trying to allow here. Because so many folks use fireworks, we just have looked a blind eye to most of the situations unless it becomes a safety issue. And members, I hope you'll let me do this last bill of mine in the Minnesota Senate so that I can go out with a bang, so to speak. And for those of you that don't believe in this bill, please get up and talk against it as much as you want. But then just because I've been such a good friend for the past 10 years in the Senate, vote yes to let me pass this last bill in the Senate. I'll stand for questions.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Jungbauer, are the firefighters, fire chiefs in support of this legislation?
Senator Jungbauer.
And thank you, Madam President. Senator Wieger, members. Firefighters, fire chiefs have never been in support of anything in terms of fireworks. Members, there's a way to do everything safely. But I'll remind you that these can be controlled. For example, if it's a high fire concern, just like the state and the fire folks can control recreational fires and tell you there's no recreational fires, they can also put out notices that say due to high fire risk, there is no allowance for fireworks to be set off. So there is controls for those kind of situations in the event that there'd be high fire risk for certain areas.
Actually, I have Senator Tomasoni, then Higgins, then Eaton. Senator Tomasoni, I think you all want a rebuttal, I think, is what...
No, I'm on his side. Thank you, Madam President. Members and Senator Jungbauer, good job. I hope you do go out with a bang here, and I hope this passes because, quite frankly, members, it would be one thing to be against this bill if there were no fireworks in Minnesota. It would be one thing if on the 4th of July, because fireworks are illegal in the state of Minnesota and there was nobody lighting off aerial fireworks, that we didn't pass this bill. But the fact of the matter is that if you go around any of the lakes on the 4th of July or near the 4th of July, and it's 10 o'clock at night when it's supposed to be dark, you'd think it's daytime because there's so many fireworks blowing off that it's unbelievable. And no, I didn't lose any fingers. And so I would say you have to take a look at what's actually going on in this state. And what's actually going on in this state is that people are buying fireworks. Here's the kicker. They're buying fireworks legally in Wisconsin and South Dakota and North Dakota. They're paying sales tax in South Dakota, North Dakota, and Wisconsin. And then they're bringing them back into the state of Minnesota after they have legally purchased something.
Senator Tomasoni, I hate to interrupt because you're on a roll, but it is rather noisy in here, and I am getting some signals from folks that they're having a very difficult time hearing. So I would ask staff and members to either take their conversations outside or lower the volume of them. So thank you very much. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. And so if it weren't for the fact that people were leaving the state of Minnesota to go out into Wisconsin and go out into North Dakota and go out into South Dakota and legally buy these things, legally pay sales tax in these other states where the other states are making all kinds of money off of Minnesotans who then bring them back into the state of Minnesota and now they are illegally blowing them off. It makes absolutely no sense. And so why in the world wouldn't we sell these things in the state of Minnesota so the Minnesotans can buy them in Minnesota, pay the sales tax in Minnesota, and the general fund of Minnesota collects the sales tax, and then we blow them off in Minnesota legally instead of making all the people illegal after they've legally purchased the things. It makes absolutely no sense at all. Please vote for this bill. Let's finally do the right thing in Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langseth, I have quite a list. I have quite a list going right now of people wanting to speak.
And I'm not on the list, is that it?
No, actually, I do have you on the list, but you're way down on the bottom right now. Senator Langseth, I am getting the impression that everybody would defer to you. Senator Langseth, please.
Madam Chair, members, I've got over 100 miles along the North Dakota, South Dakota border. And in July, they have these little sheds over just a couple hundred feet beyond the border. And most of their sales, of course, go to Minnesotans. So I think it is a bit ridiculous. Even down at our lake cabin, there are fireworks going off for several nights in a row. Minnesotans are using fireworks. They just happen to be buying it from another state and allowing those revenues to go there. So I think this is a good bill, and let's vote for it.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam President. I hate to be the first one to get up and say, please vote no on this bill. I've lived in the farm. I've lived in the suburbs. I've lived in the city where our houses are 45 feet apart, front door to front door. And what I've noticed about fireworks is that it's a whole different experience when you're in an open area, like where Senator Tomasoni may live, or out on a lake, or when you're living so close to one another like we do in the cities. Let me tell you about a couple of my constituents. On 4th of July and the surrounding days are the most terrifying days of the year for them. They are both blind. They smell the fireworks. They hear the explosions. They have no idea whether their house is on fire or what's going on in their community. And they are terrified. Just because you all might like to blow off fireworks doesn't mean that your friends and neighbors who are around you like the same experience. And would Senator Jungbauer yield for a question?
Senator Jungbauer will yield. Senator Higgins.
Senator Jungbauer, I see on page 3, line 24 and or thereabouts, no, 22, I guess it is, that you refuse to let the local governments even permit or license the fireworks retailers and wholesalers. I think that if, as Senator Tomasoni kept talking about all the taxes and the fees and everything that we're going to be collecting on this wonderful thing that you're going to impose on the rest of the state, why in the world would you not allow the local governments to at least enact a permit so they have some idea of where they're going to be all of these stands, whether they are permanent or temporary, or like Senator Langseth called them, a little shack?
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Madam President and Senator Higgins, I guess I'm having a problem with that because I'm trying to figure out from line 3.14, we allowed the local unit of government to impose an annual license fee for the retail sale, and the fee must be set at a reasonable amount based on the public safety issues and inspections associated with those devices. So we actually went more open than what the existing law said in terms of fixed fees. So I don't know how that comes in terms of the sale of sparkling devices or novelties is what I read for they can't impose a fee on. So I think there's a misunderstanding on the way it's written. Because that was one of the things we had talked to many cities with, and they said those fees that were fixed into law originally may be higher today because in adopting the actual NFPA safety code, that requires more inspections of those facilities that sell fireworks because there's a new level, so we allowed it to be an open fee based on those amounts of services required by the city. So I think the only thing we're not, the way I read it, the only thing we're not allowing a fee on is those sparkler devices or the little novelties that many parents do let their children use.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you.
Higgins, I'm sorry, I waited a second, but do you have a follow-up on that, Senator Higgins?
Thank you, Madam President. I think I do. So, Senator Jungbauer, yet another question, if you'll yield. On line 3.31 and 3.32, you also, it looks like, not allow cities to enact any ordinance, rule, or regulation that, oh, we're back to sparklers and devices again. Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. I don't know where everybody else lives, but in my neighborhood in Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and when I grew up in Mankato and was out on the farm, everybody uses fireworks. It's the law against them has been as effective as prohibition. All it does is make criminals out of our friends, families, and neighbors. I do support this bill. I understand the concerns as a nurse with the hospitals have and the cities have and so on, but they're being used anyway. Let's make them legal so that we can control what's going on.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Well, you know, I agree with just about everybody that I've heard speak here today. I love fireworks. I love fireworks. And I really hate having our commerce go to the state of Wisconsin. I like to keep those dollars here in Minnesota. And I did hear the debate about this business going to Wisconsin and wishing that Minnesota would have the same type of legal fireworks that Wisconsin does. And so with that, members, I have an amendment to offer, and that would be the A9 amendment. The A9
Senator
amendment.
Senator Nelson offers the A9 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Nelson moves to amend Senate File 1694 as follows, page 3 after line 13, insert. This is the A9 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I hope this is a common sense amendment that we all can support. This is an amendment that would mirror Wisconsin in regards to Class C fireworks. Class C fireworks are I'm just handing out a photo for you so you can see maybe what the size of some of those fireworks are. And I've also handed out a Q&A for you so you can know a little bit about what Class C fireworks are. I did not know that. For example, currently our firecrackers, which seems a little ridiculous, are illegal in Minnesota. And they have a half a 0.05 of a gram of explosive power. However, the fireworks that are being considered in this bill before us now have 10,000 times more power than that. They have 500 grams of explosive power. So I think it's important that we know what type of fireworks we're talking about. My amendment, as I said, would mirror Wisconsin law. It merely says that a person who wants to possess or purchase these Class C fireworks must first obtain a permit. And the permit can be only valid within the jurisdiction of the people issuing the authority. That would take into account the concerns we heard on the Senate floor today. Those jurisdictions where these type of explosives or types of fireworks would be dangerous, those jurisdictions would not allow a permit. Those areas of the state which would like to allow these type of fireworks could allow that permit, but it provides for local control. The permit also specifies the type and quantity of these devices. It specifies a certain time period in which they must be used, possessed, or purchased. And the permit must specify the locations where they will be used. And there are other pieces as well. The other thing you might want to know is the permit holder
I believe is can be asked to, or I should say there is a violation of a $1,000 fine if someone shoots off these Class C fireworks without a permit. So I'm hoping that the members can vote for the A9 amendment. It seems like a common sense solution to the many questions and debate that we've had on the Senate floor today. It would allow for local control.
Further discussion to the A9, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I would ask you to vote against the A9 amendment. Members, people are getting fireworks from a lot more than just Wisconsin. They're a lot different. And members, as I said before, the actual size of the maximum size of fireworks today that are allowable for retail sale and use in the United States is already regulated by the federal government. Those fun things, again, the M80s we used to blow the fence posts apart with when I was young, those are not allowable anymore. Those are too big. Those are a safety hazard, according to the federal government. I think we'll have ways that, again, cities, counties can control a lot of the issues with fireworks that they do not like under nuisance and noise and safety fire ordinances that they already have. I don't think we need anything other than just to take and make Minnesotans legal that are now criminals for setting off the fireworks.
Discussion to the A9, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I would urge support of the A9 amendment, Senator Nelson's amendment. I think it puts us on par, especially with our neighboring states, and it addresses the local control issue, and I'd urge members to support the A9 amendment.
Further discussion to the A9, Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, the A9 amendment is what we refer to around here as gutting the bill, because what you will do is you'll end up having the people who don't want to get a permit go over to Wisconsin and buying the fireworks again and then bringing them back into Minnesota, and they're going to have exactly the same situation. The whole idea is to sell the fireworks in Minnesota so that Minnesotans can legally use them. If you require a permit, all of the people that use them now will say, I'm not going to pay for the permit, I'm just going to go get the fireworks somewhere else, and I'm going to blow them off in Minnesota. So this will gut the bill. It'll reduce the bill to exactly what the law is now, and it won't have any effect in Minnesota. And all of the people using fireworks today will continue to go to a different state to buy the fireworks.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to request a roll call vote on the Nelson Amendment.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Further discussion to the A9 amendment. Secretary will take the roll on the A9 amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 29 ayes and 34 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Continuing on the discussion on Senate File 1694, Senator Latz would have been next on my list. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to oppose this legislation. You'll see on your desks the list of all of the organizations that oppose this legislation. The law enforcement agencies and medical associations and all of the chiefs of police, the state fire chiefs, Alina Hospitals, Children's Hospitals, Regents Hospital, American College of Emergency Physicians, Minnesota for Safe Fireworks, the Alliance to Stop Consumer Fireworks, which is all of these academies of physicians, the Mayo Clinic, the League of Minnesota Cities, Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Safety Council, Minnesota Professional Firefighters, the Ambulance Association, all of the organizations that really help us when emergencies come up and are really out there and about when these fires occurred because of the use of fireworks. So, Madam President, members, this is a bill that is dangerous to our kids mostly because over 50% of the accidents occur on children. And I do believe that if you are wanting legislation like this, you should take more time to look at the restrictions that other states have. Yes, other states do allow fireworks, but they have other restrictions on it, which this bill does not. For example, in South Dakota, each licensee shall, in the conduct of the business of selling fireworks, keep and maintain a fire extinguisher. So they just know that something's going to happen. So they require a fire extinguisher. Also in South Dakota, there are signs that read no smoking within 25 feet. So they're aware that these accidents happen. So they use precautionary methods in their legislation, which we do not have in ours. Wisconsin law, a parent, foster parent, or legal guardian who consents to the use of fireworks by the minor is liable for the damages caused by the minor's use of fireworks, so they admit that there's going to be harm and that other people are responsible for it. In South Dakota, the laws restrict fireworks to certain time periods, June 25th through July 5th, and December 28th to January 21st. They're restricted during those time periods. This law would be year-round, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Madam Speaker and Madam President and members, this is a bill that is not ready for this body yet. We have a lot of work to do still. If you're interested in fireworks, I don't believe we need a bill like this at all. But if you are insistent on having it, we still need to do a lot of work on this. So for this one, I urge you to vote no on this bill. Follow your chiefs of police, your emergency room doctors, and all the people that take care of you and are out there for your own safety, and vote no on this bill.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I just want to respond to some of that. Of course all the safety issues are dealt with in this bill. That's why we use the NFPA 1124, which is the code for the manufacture, transportation, storage, and retail sales of fireworks, which deals in pyrotechnic articles, by the way, which deals 100% with how do you sell them, display them, be ready for those safety issues. That's why we're not playing games here. We're adopting a code that is nationwide for the people that have fireworks, except people that exempt, states that exempt, like South Dakota, that exempt from the National Fire Code on these particular issues. And once again, members, as we talk about safety issues, it is illegal against the law, any other way you want to say it, for people under 18 to possess or purchase fireworks. Members, we cannot outlaw stupidity. If we could, we would have a much easier job. We cannot keep dumb parents from giving fireworks to their children. We cannot keep dumb people from setting them off in cities where they do have control on small lots, where the cities, we do not take the city's control away from times. They could set up something about certain dates. We're not taking any of that away. We're simply telling them that they do not have control over the ability to not allow the sale or possession of the fireworks. Anything else they have 100% control over. And members, again, I would refer you to the chart of children's injuries. Of course I worry about children getting hurt. Of course I have children. I have grandchildren. And as you can see, fireworks are exponentially safer than many other things like skateboarding and bicycling and rollerblading and hockey and soccer. Exponentially safer. And ever since the year 2000, members, in Minnesota and every other state in the union, we have had less and less incidents with fireworks because we are adopting national standards for the safety, use, sale, and possession of fireworks. And that's what keeps it easy, simple to follow, and keeps the law clean.
Further discussion on Senate File 16, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. I think we need to look at some relative safety provisions that are currently in law. And as far as I am aware, the DNR can, in periods of drought, issue a no-burn ban, but they're not able to, and I don't believe they'd be able to under this legislation, to issue no-fireworks bans during a period of drought. And I don't know about your neighborhood, but when people are setting them off in mine, they may be half a block down the down from me, and they end up on my deck. And some of them are still lit. So on holidays, I'm very, very alert to the remnants of a firework and where it goes. And some of these C-type fireworks can travel as much as 100 feet in the air, and they are a fire danger, but I don't believe Senator Youngbauer's bill allows the DNR to issue such a no fireworks ban, and I also oppose the bill and ask others to do the same.
Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Riss, and members, if I will just refer you to the blue sheet at the bottom. Members, we are not taking any authority away from anybody to regulate anything under the welfare clause, which deals specifically with public safety and welfare. And certainly, as we talked to the DNR, they thought they had the authority to regulate the setting off of anything to do with fireworks. And under current Minnesota statute 88.195, subdivision 4, careless or negligent use of fireworks or burning or smoldering substances that starts a fire and endangers or damages property is a misdemeanor. It will continue to be illegal under this bill. We do not usurp any laws that prevent or protect people from already these things as a fire hazard.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President and members. There's been some discussions about Minnesota laws as they relate to other laws around the country and our neighboring states being more liberal or allowing the use of fireworks to a greater extent. However, it's my belief, it's my understanding that in North Dakota and in South Dakota, there are laws to restrict fireworks, and they restrict them to certain times of the year. For example, they're restricted to June 25th through July 5th, and from December 28th to January 21st. The Minnesota law, on the other hand, will be for all year, 24 hours a day. Now, I live in downtown St. Paul, and it's a very noisy place to live. And now we have temporarily light rail, but the rest of the year we have skateboarders, we have traffic, we have fire engines, we have ambulances, we have police sirens, and now it looks like we're going to have people setting up fireworks. I don't think this is a very good bill.
Further discussion. Senator Latz, I would give you one more opportunity. Secretary, we'll give Senate File 16, I'm sorry, Senator Harrington.
Madam President, I'm sorry to put a damper on Senator Jungbauer's last bill, but I also have to rise to oppose this bill. My fire chief, Tim Butler, strongly opposes this bill. The head of the burn unit at Regents Hospital, which sees literally hundreds and hundreds of young people with injuries from fireworks, opposes this bill. And I can tell you from personal experience that in an urban environment, unregulated fireworks use is absolutely a hazard. When we would run major special events in St. Paul, which oftentimes had professional pyrotechnic displays, the professionals who would be setting off exactly the kinds of things that Senator Jungbauer has in his bill would require us to shut down areas for landing zones so that the fiery objects as they come back to Earth did not cause any damage. We would have to have folks out in those landing zones with fire extinguisher or other fire extinguishing materials so that if they did catch fire to a brush or to a house, we were in a position to do something about that. What this bill does is it proposes to allow folks who are not trained to use the same kind of high-level pyrotechnics that professionals are using. This will be a hazard to houses. It will be a hazard to brush and wildlife. And I can tell you that it will be a hazard to young people. We will see more young people potentially in the burn unit. And as much money as we might make from selling fireworks here rather than having folks go to Wisconsin for them, I guess I would ask the question, how much is that worth? Is someone who we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in a burn unit, is that worth whatever revenue we bring in? Is someone who loses a hand to fireworks, how much is that worth? If someone loses an eye, if someone loses their house, at what point does the cost-benefit analysis no longer favor what little sales tax we will generate from this?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, once again, I would love to refer you to my chart on children's injuries. And as much as I love my esteemed colleague, Senator Harrington, you were 100% false in your statements there. If we're talking about saving lives and saving injuries, we better start with bicycles because, as you can see from the chart, they're exponentially more dangerous than fireworks. And again, we can't outlaw stupidity. We can't keep parents from allowing kids access to them. We are not, members, allowing professional pyrotechnics. We are allowing retail fireworks as defined by the federal law, as defined by the American Pyrotechnics Association, which we also put in the bill that defines in great detail exactly what these fireworks are, and we are defining all the safety codes in the code book exactly what you should be doing to protect health and human life. Members, we trust code books all across the nation for a lot of other things. We're talking about something totally different. Retail fireworks and professional pyrotechnics are two separate and distinct items.
Senator Harrington.
To that point, I know I'm supposed to look at you. I'm doing this the right way. Since the state of Minnesota licensed or allowed commercial fireworks, as Senator Jungbauer wants to refer to them, fireworks-related injuries have increased 385%. That's a fact. I'm not sure where bicycle injuries, whether they got worse or better. I'm not sure if skateboard injuries got worse or better. But we know that since we allowed the possession of commercial fireworks, we have seen almost 400% increase in fireworks-related injuries. Fire-related incidents, houses burn, brush fires, since in that four-year period, have increased 884%. There's a cost-benefit relationship here. For every house burned, for every person injured, there is a cost to the state, there's a cost to the community, and while we can't legislate stupidity, we certainly don't have to encourage it.
Senator Jungbauer.
Members, I really don't want to belabor this because people are going to vote like they're going to vote. We all have better places to be sometimes to go out and talk to our constituents about other things. But I don't know where Senator Harrington gets his data, but my data says specifically, fires caused by fireworks in Minnesota peaked in 2007, as they did members in many states, and have been trending downward in 2008, 9, and 10. We don't have the 11 statistics in yet. So they've been lower, not going up, lower every year. So I don't know where that's going. And the fireworks-related injuries have been going down as well since 2006. So again, all the data we can find, everything shows a downward trend.
Senator Harrington.
To that point, well, I got my data from the Minnesota State Fire Marshals. I'm not quite sure where Senator Jumbauer is getting his. And just to that point, in terms of my cost-benefit analysis, just one brush fire caused by fireworks in, I think it's 2002, cost $1.7 million. So how much revenue, Senator Jungbauer, are we going to bring in? Is it going to cover the 1.7 for that one fire and for the 385% that the State Fire Marshal's Office says have increased since we began the process of allowing more commercial fireworks?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I will just caution you to check again the facts, because I do know that there's somebody been going around telling people that a specific fire that was a very dangerous fire and cost a lot of money was caused by fireworks. That is, in fact, not true. It was caused by somebody burning, but the burn got out of control. So I'll just leave it at that. There's many misleading things put out by people that don't want this bill to pass.
Secretary will give Senate File 1694 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1694, a bill for an act relating to public safety, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1694.
All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes and 22 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, will take up the confirmation calendar. Senator Fischbach.
I move that the report from the Committee on Higher Ed reported March 3rd, 2011, pertaining to appointments to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Fischbach.
I move that that foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Fischbach.
I move that that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Higher Ed reported March 3, 2011, the Senate, having given it its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of, for the Board of Trustees and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, Dwayne Benson, for a term expiring June 30, 2016, Philip Krinke, for a term expiring on June 30, 2016, Alfredo Oliveira, for a term expiring on June 30th, 2012. Thomas S. Reiner, for a term expiring on June 30th, 2016. And Michael Vekic, for a term expiring on June 30th, 2016.
Any further discussion?
Mr. President, just a point of information.
Senator Pappas.
It's just one motion to approve them all. We're not going to vote separately on them.
It's one motion to approve them all.
Can we vote separately on them? Can I pull one out and have a separate vote?
Yes, you can.
Then I would like to ask that Phil Krinke be separate for him.
Right, Senator Fischbach, Mr. Krinke's name has been pulled. There'll be two motions, and it's your decision which motion goes first.
Mr. President, we might as well vote first on the Benson, Oliveira, Rainier, and Vekic motion.
Further discussion on the motion.
Mr. President.
Senator Fischbach.
I would just like to point out, members, I believe we did hand out some information regarding each of the candidates, so I won't go through everybody, but if someone did have questions, I'd be happy to try to answer.
Further discussion, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just couldn't let the occasion go by without saying something positive about Dwayne Benson and thank him for all the work he has done as the director of MELF and all of the work he has done to make sure that each and every young child has access to high-quality preschool education. So I'm pleased to support his recommendation to be part of the board.
Further discussion? Senator Kielash.
Yeah, it's just a point of information. On the handout, we have a trustee, Jacob England. He is not on the board. I don't know if that's included in this motion and it's an oversight.
Mr. President.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, that's a separate motion simply because they were reported to the Senate on different days.
Further discussion. On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. On the divided motion, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I'd like a roll call vote on this, please, and I'd like to speak to the motion.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do have some concerns about a conflict of interest for Trustee Krinke. I feel like in his role as president of the Taxpayers League of Minnesota that he is in a position in which he advocates for positions and for policies that are in direct conflict to the positions of the Board of Trustees for MinSCU and the best, what's the best situation for the Board of Trustees at MinSCU. So I would respectfully request that people vote against his nomination.
Further discussion. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President. I just wondered if Sarah Pappas could talk a little bit about what are the policies that she believes Mr. Krinke are advocating for that are contrary. She did make that assertion, and I guess I'd just like more clarification on which exact positions or policies is he advocating against, and why would that disqualify him? I believe that there are a number of positions that this legislature takes that are very disparate from things that finally get adopted, but those things don't disqualify us from service in the legislature.
Are you asking Senator Pappas to yield?
Mr. President, if she would answer the question, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, Senator Hahn, I think you could look on the website of the Taxpayers League and see what their goals and their objectives are in terms of tax policy, in terms of spending, and I think they are in direct conflict to what the needs are for the Minsky system.
Further discussion on the confirmation of Mr. Krinke. Seeing none, roll call has been requested and granted. Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 44 ayes and 11 nays, the confirmation is approved. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, I move that the report from the Committee on Higher Ed reported May 9, 2011, pertaining to the appointments to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Fischbach.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Fischbach.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Higher Ed reported May 9, 2011, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of the Board of Trustees to the Minnesota State Colleges and University, Jacob England, for a term expiring on June 30, 2012.
Further discussion? On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Appointment was confirmed. Thirteenth order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just wanted to alert members, particularly members on the Health and Human Services Conference Committee that was appointed earlier today. We are planning to meet in conference with the members from the House about 1/2 hour after the adjournment of the other body in room 200 of SOB.
Further announcements of Senate interest? Without objection, the following are excused. Senator Sharon from 12 to 1:10 p.m., Senator Reinert from 4:15 to the end, Senator Lowry from 4:55 to the end, Senator Jungbauer from 5:05 to the end. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans will caucus tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. in room 318, and the business now being concluded, I would move that we adjourn until April 18th at 11 o'clock.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned.